absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to show 300 of Absolutely Intercultural. My name's Anne Fox, and this show is coming to you from Denmark. In this show, I find out more about a very interesting EU-supported collaboration between a group of universities, intercultural practitioners recruited from CIETAR, the Society for Intercultural Education and Research, and the culture game Diversify, as they developed a conversation game aimed at helping both sides understand more about each other in various common intercultural situations. The tool is called InclueKit, as it's aimed at fostering inclusion, and in this case the focus was on migrants, asylum seekers and refugees. You play the game in small groups of 4 to 6 people who discuss the issues they're presented with. The strategy of InclueKit is to start with finding out what the groups think of a particular situation in general, and then the job of the facilitator is to gradually feed more and more specific information about the situation, with the group talking about how they react to the developing story, which is built on an incident which happened to a real-life asylum centre employee.
We put the story, only a part of it, and we ask some actual questions. What would you do? What could be done? What could be done differently? So a lot of speculation. So we play with these puzzles of something that actually happened to our informants in our research.
When I sat down to talk to Michal, David and Katrin, I asked them to take me through one of their conversation cases called Eva's Day, about a worker in a reception centre for asylum seekers. Let's hear more about how this scenario was built and how the conversation around it is guided as we go absolutely inclusive. Firstly with Michal, and then David and Katrin.
Predominantly built around real-life stories. So we collected these stories in the research phase and we found some, let's say, ideal type stories that we used for different excuses to start the conversation around problems that might occur during the reception or work with forced migrants. For example, this one is built around a story that we've heard from an actual person working in the, as you said, an NGO, and a person who had to deal with an actual situation, namely a conflict between two groups. It is a little bit more complicated. There are different ways we gamified it. This one is we start with asking folks whether they understand what asylum seeking, let's say, center looks like. And then we put the story, only a part of it, and we ask some actual questions. What would you do? What could be done? What could be done differently? So a lot of speculation. So we play with these puzzles of something that actually happened to our informants in our research.
Basically, the participants have to imagine how they would deal with the situation if they had to face it. And then it is revealed how the person we interviewed originally dealt with this case in reality. And then the participants get to compare their solution with her solution. And as Michal said, speculate about what could be done in different ways, possibly better to solve the issue.
We also very often use not only description of the situation, but actual quotes to give this flesh and blood, let's say, feeling that this is something that actually happened, and there was some quotation, some actual wording of, I don't know, either conclusion or a comment or an evaluation.
And so we see 3 questions. And when we started, I remember very well that we started with the first question, which is the difficulties faced by people who live in reception centers. And when we tested it with different target groups, someone said, yes, but if you're asking only this question, you're already placing this in a negative light, as if we assumed ourselves that living in a reception center was a challenging and difficult situation. And someone said, but why don't you ask also if there are positive aspects to living in such a center? And so that's the second question here on this list. And this is just to explain that this is the whole idea behind this tool, is to apply the so-called critical approaches to intercultural communication, which are quite commonplace now in academia, but not necessarily in the practice of intercultural trainers. And so really to get people to challenge these assumptions, these preconceptions that we ourselves also have about migrants, about refugees, asylum seekers, and yeah, hopefully to for them to get out of the sessions with a more critical perspective on these issues.
I am interested to know what sort of reactions you had at this point when you were testing out this particular case.
Yes, I could participate in a group that had this case. So on the first question about imagining the difficulties, it was very interesting to see that participants found more and more. The more you think about it, the more ideas came of varied difficulties and really being several talking about, several persons talking about it, led to an increase of, I remember, writings on the paper. It became bigger and bigger. And so I think the way it's done is also very productive, actually, to have a paper to write on, to have to draw and design, not only talk, but also really produce some words or some drawings. On the positive aspect, it was a bit more of an effort, at least for that, for those participants, to find ideas. And again, there was a good collective process of completing. And I found this also creative because it gave ideas of things that could be catalyzed or reinforced in actual current centers about socializing, getting strengths one from another, sharing also skills, not being alone, obviously getting support for all kinds of things. But beyond that, there were lots of ideas.
So is it fair to say that going through this process expands people's idea of what a center for people seeking asylum is like?
Definitely. Some persons had experience, some others imagined, and also of what it could be or can be in certain places. So it expands also imaginaries and sharing of experience.
So as Michał explained, we collected this data and then it went through a process of gamification, but also abstraction, so to speak. That is, for example, we removed a lot of references to nationality, to gender, to things like that, to avoid people projecting immediately a number of assumptions. Michał revealed that this case was collected in Poland, actually, but this is not mentioned from at the beginning, because otherwise what is that people immediately, yes, start to make assumptions based on nationality, for instance, or based on religion, say, if it was Christian or atheistic Europeans receiving Muslim migrants, for instance. This brings, like, immediately conjures some images, and we wanted to avoid that. And as a side note, this particular set of questions, when we asked them in Lille with Catherine, it was an international group of people. We had people from all around the world. So this also allows them to share how reception centers work in different parts of the world. Because often people who work, say, in France, where I'm based, they imagine that what they see in France is universal and that it's done always in the same way everywhere. If you get a chance to play this with people from different countries, then you might have ideas that, oh yeah, okay, maybe it can be done differently, because in Ireland, in Germany, in Poland, we had someone from Australia, it's done completely differently. So that opens up new possibilities as well.
We've been looking at the first stage of this discussion process, where you're bringing out people's assumptions and thoughts about what a refugee center or an asylum center would look like, and the difficulties and positives that might come out of it. And you then present a problem that occurred in the asylum center and ask people to consider this problem. So what is this stage? Is it's concretizing a specific problem in the setting that you've just asked people to explore.
We wanted folks to start understanding the, let's say, structural conditions. So what, how the situation, how the place or site is structured, maybe what are the power relations, what are the problems, what are the complexities of it. And then we can only start with this concrete example, concrete problem, where you could initially take sides maybe or have some presumptions, but right now you are prepared to think systematically about it. We hope it helps.
Yeah, in this second stage, this is where you're using a quote from a person who you've actually talked to. So you're using her lived experience about working in an asylum center and asking the group to consider what she has just said. And presumably this acts as new information for them after they've discussed it in general terms.
Like you said, it adds information. And I think for people who are involved, who are trying to understand better the reality of people who work inside, it gets more lived, more real by listening to the actual words of the person, because these are real words, as Michal said. And also it adds some, I don't know, it's people recognize, the people who are involved recognize psychological states or stages they've been through, or like doubts they had, questions they had. And this is also what is powerful, is that it's not easy also to be a person who wants to support. You don't necessarily get the reactions you expect. You don't really know what to do at many moments. And so actually it's also helpful. It's a challenging training, but it's also very helpful for that, because it tackles precisely these issues.
Just to add to that very briefly, that the keyword here on this page, the second stage, is uncertainty, dealing with uncertainty. So when we did the background research, we identified, we talked to a lot of people who work in this field, and we tried to identify specific issues or themes that we wanted to address with the tool. And some of them we excluded, some of them we kept, and so on. There was a whole process. And uncertainty, dealing with uncertainty, was one of those themes that we decided to include. And what Catherine said is really important, because uncertainty, dealing with uncertainty, is something all people who have worked in this field have had to face. And so when you see the reaction, a life story like that, it echoes your own life story as someone who helps. And then in a small group, you start discussing this theme of uncertainty, and then it continues with other types of activities in the rest of the session.
So that was looking at a quote from a worker. And then in the next stage, we're now on the third task, the group is asked to consider a specific conflict that has arisen in the asylum center, and it's asking about the role of the asylum center worker and what she should or could do about it. So it's getting more and more concrete as we go along, I feel.
Not giving any concrete answers. So there is no right or wrong answer to that. There is a question, an issue, yeah. There is a conflict, there is a problem, and you have to decide. And it hopefully also helps to understand that we can't give you an instruction to the relationship, how to build a relationship in the asylum seeker center, to a key to work with asylum seekers. Now, we can give you just some sort of framework to think about it. And unfortunately, it's complicated, but fortunately, you can consider many different aspects of it. Yeah,
so the way you've done it is that you have presented the problem as it presents to a passerby. And then in the next stage, you've given a bit of background information which might help to explain the problem, although it doesn't solve it. So all the time you're going deeper and deeper, you're giving more and more information. And then there is some sort of solution in this one. So maybe people feel that the people who are participating feel a sense of closure, maybe, for this one.
Yeah,
Yes.
as we explained before, that is the solution that was found in real life by the person who provided this information. But once again, as Michał just said, we don't present this as the solution.
Mm-hmm.
It's the solution that she found.
Yeah.
And then the whole idea is to then discuss this solution and see what are the advantages of it, the disadvantages, and like question it really in a constructive way, of course, not challenge it, but try to see why she made this decision, what other things could have been done, and again, sharing experience of similar situations in the group.
This worked particularly well in the group I was, because nobody had come even close to what she did, actually, the person in the real case. So there were ideas, but the way that person, specifically in that situation, the way she decided to handle things was a surprise and actually made a big impact. This really worked well to decenter from your own spontaneous solution, own spontaneous thinking, to show there are other ways to deal with things. And maybe it's not what you thought at first. So this worked very well in the group I was with.
Presumably, it's a good side effect of having consulted real people and getting real cases to base your scenarios on. You've got the solution that this worker came up with and the solution that the group comes up with through discussion, and you're saying that they're different. There's one thing that I notice in all the cases that you've developed so far, and that is that there is a fairly common debriefing session at the end. So you're really getting people to assess what they've been through, the process they've been through, what different perspectives that they had, and their expectations and their biases and so on. So there's a quite comprehensive debriefing process at the end.
This was essential. It's an essential part of the tool. But we also talked to some of our colleagues who are academic experts of the field, and they said, if you want to achieve this sort of critical outcome, you really need to have debriefing at the end. Because what we wanted to avoid, if you want, with all due respect to all the tools that exist out there and that are great, but we wanted to avoid this kind of toolbox kind of thing where you have right or wrong solutions or ticking boxes at the end. This is not really the spirit of this tool. It's more open. It's more, how could I say that? It could be harder to deal with in that sense, because participants might expect clear-cut answers, but that's not what we want. We provide them more with questions than answers. So at the end, again, the debriefing has this sort of meta approach that we would say in academia, that is, okay, now take a step back. What did you learn from this? What expectations were challenged? How was it comfortable, not comfortable? And that's, so at the end, there is this moment of debriefing.
Yeah, I just want to add that this is the way we addressed another structural problem of the kit itself. So far, we don't have funding to oversee these sessions. So it has to be a kit that you can work with on your own.
Mm.
Without any type of supervision. So this is a kind of supervision. We give you a structure, the users, the players, if you will. We give the structure, okay, so you played it, now do the checklist and debrief yourself. So this was the only way we could control it, if you will, at the end, right? There is no way we can supervise all possible uses of this at the moment we are, at least. But this is the safety check, if you will.
Maybe one last thing would be to say that we also worked on the visual design of this and the language used. So we tried to have inclusive language, which was a challenge. This is a prototype version, so it's not entirely solved. And of course, there are different issues with inclusive language in different languages. So English, and then when we started translating it, we thought, okay, let's now in French, how are we going to manage this? So the inclusive language and also the visual design was done by our esteemed colleagues at the University of Opole.
So there's a lot more to creating a toolkit like this than you might have thought at first. Thank you to Catherine from France, Michal from Poland, and David also from France, for taking the time to explain the in-depth process they went through to come up with these InclueKit conversation exercises. The first version of the kit is now available for free in English, French, German, Italian, and Spanish. And you can download the facilitator guide and three case studies to try out for yourself by going to the project website hosted by the University of Opole. Do you see a role for this type of exercise in your context? Looking at the three scenarios already built up, can you think of additional ones that you would like to build? Do you see yourself as a facilitator for this type of exercise? Have you tried it? Let us know in the comments, and if you want to share how it went in a future show, then do get in touch. So yes, that was the 300th show since we started way back in 2006, before podcasts became popular. And you can browse through them all at our website at absolutely-intercultural.com. Thank you for still listening. And if you have a story to tell, then don't hesitate to get in touch or leave a comment. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can give us a rating. And if you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook too. The next show will be coming to you from Germany with Laurent Borgmann on December the 6th. So until then, stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.